Guys, welcome to the See You on the Trail podcast. My name is Hitch, and I'm here with a guy. We're actually at his shop. This is Adam Shearer with Tribe 16. What's going on, buddy?
How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Awesome. I've already a couple beers in and a couple drinks in, and so far I'm doing good. Last night was a fun one.
Nice.
We went to downtown Fort Worth. We did it the whole Big Bang Theory thing. We went to the Cheesecake Factory and spent $100 there. And then went to Cowtown or Stockyards. And then we ended up at Billy Bob's. And then we went to some speakeasy bar down below. You had to walk downstairs to get to it.
Interesting. I don't know about that one.
Cowboy Channel, I think is what they called it.
Huh.
I apparently met this guy named Ricky Boland. And he says he's the owner of Resist All Hats. I Googled him. To be honest, I think he was filling me full of shit.
He had you hook, line, and sinker. Huh?
Well, I didn't buy him any drinks, so he didn't get nothing out of me. So I guess we're all right.
Yeah, well, but you can't go wrong with a night out at the Stockyards.
Oh, it's fun, man.
And Billy Bob's, you know, Billy Bob's the biggest honky tonk in Texas.
It is. Well, I guess in the world. It's got the longest bar in the world. I think is what it holds its Guinness Book of World Records.
Nice.
But it was really cool. Let's start out. We're here at Tribe 16. We're in the conference room right now. There's a party going on outside with a bounce house obstacle course, 40 by 40, because Lance said that's what he measured for. And you guys are gonna play flip cup, and then you have to run through it.
Yeah, I think we'll probably figure it out as we go. It's very loosely scheduled, but I think we're gonna do like a competition. We'll do a flip cup. Kind of rally race through it, like almost like a, you know, like a relay race, you know, where,
okay.
So we'll, you know, and then yeah, we'll have it timed and
that's awesome.
We'll see how it works. I don't know. We're
having fun.
We're yeah. Everything's not very scheduled. Very, you know, very tight around here.
I've been coming here to the Crawfish Boil for how many have you had? I think I missed one.
Yeah. Oof. I don't know. We've had, you know, I don't keep a count.
Yeah. Well, I remember the way we always remembered him. Was that the drift track race year, or was that the human foosball? Was that the cornhole tournament?
Yeah. Yeah. We like to switch it up. You know, it's nice to have different entertainment.
Right. Right. So, yeah. So guys, if you aren't here, you're missing out. This will come out later. So it already happened, but you can plan for the next year. It always happens the last weekend in April, usually.
Yes.
And I can go back on my memories on Facebook and see everything that we do. It's good fun.
Yeah, always a good time. Good turnout. Our guys, the Donaldsons, they do all the crawfish cooking, and we do all the barbecue, and it's a great time.
Yeah, no, they you bought 12 30-pound bags of crawfish today.
Yep.
And you're planning on going through it.
I hope we get some eaters.
Are you going to be having crawfish for lunch for 2 weeks?
Yeah. I don't know. If it gets, you know, all eaten throughout the end of the day, that's a win.
That's a win-win.
Yeah. You don't want to not get enough to where you run out early. So I don't think we're going to run out early. So
okay, good.
Yeah. Hey, and you know, it always makes a good like etouffee or a jambalaya later on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, now you kind of talked a little Cajun French there. Let's go ahead and talk about your history. Where'd you come from, and what got you here today?
I'm not Cajun. I'm not from Louisiana, but I do enjoy our neighboring state and their cuisine. Absolutely. No, I'm from here, born and raised in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and lived here pretty much most of my life. We did move to San Antonio for a couple of years and then came back, so. I would say, you know, born and raised Texan, mostly here from the Fort Worth area.
Okay, cool. And then you grew up here. What got you into tires and wheels, and what got you on four-wheel driving? Let's start out that way.
Well, let's see here. Girls, because, you know, they don't, you know, in high school, nobody wants to ride around on a bicycle with you. Yeah. Now, of course, you know, when you're a kid, you got to have means of transportation, so you know that you know your first vehicle, and then of course you get your first ride and you want to trick it out and do all the cool stuff, have the nice, you know, stereo system. And
what was your first car when you turned 16? What was your first car?
My very first car was an old Datsun. It was like a B2000 truck or something.
No way.
Like that. Yeah,
all right.
It was extended. It had the little crew cab in the back.
Yeah. Was it dually?
No, this little thing. I don't even think they made dualies on that. It was a little lightweight truck. But first truck had a stereo system in it.
Nice.
I built my own little speaker box and, you know, all that cool stuff. That's where, you know, kind of started learning to work on vehicles was, you know, tinkering around with that.
Gotcha. So what was your first job?
I was actually a carpenter. My first job. My father, had a good friend, of the family, and he was a trim carpenter, and, which was nice because, you know, I could just help them out on the weekends or, you know, summer break, this and that. And that's kind of what I did. I started, you know, learning how to cut trim molding and building, you know, finishing out houses, remodels and stuff like that.
That carpenter work actually goes into the next job that you had, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, learning how to be precise on building things. You know, you're working within 16ths of an inch to, you know, to fit trim and you know, or even tighter than that to where everything is set up nice. So,
okay.
You know, that precision of doing, we built really nice houses back in the day. You know, huge, huge mansions, and learning how to do that and kind of really helps, you know, sculpt your mind on finished product and starting from nothing. And you want to build this huge elaborate fireplace or something like that.
Gotcha.
So cutting all that molding and just learning how to just how it works out in your brain, you know, and doing that. So.
Gotcha. Cool. So you were a trim carpenter, then yep. You move on into what was the next one?
Actually, trim carpenter and I worked in a cabinet shop.
Oh, so
yeah.
Carpentry.
So kind of the same, yeah. Doing cabinets, building cabinets, and kind of back and forth between the two. So
cool.
From there, that's when I went into the car stereo business.
That's right. Because yeah. I haven't heard this straight from the horse's mouth, so that's why I was asking. I knew you got into car stereos at some point in time.
That was my hobby. You know, the construction stuff was nice. It was, you know, to be a craftsman and to be able to build and, you know, see your finished product when you leave and everything's ready for the painters. But my hobby was always doing car stereos, you know, building the big base systems and, you know, with the woodwork, you know, learning how to do all the woodwork, building custom speaker boxes and amp panels and, you know, all the real cool, elaborate little stuff. That was my passion, my hobby.
Gotcha. And then you worked in a shop or did you actually end up owning your own car audio shop at one point in time or?
No. When I was still a teenager, I took a job at Circuit City back in the day, Circuit City.
Nice.
And man. Yeah. And their 12 volt department. And that's kind of where, you know, I learned to work on the whole array of vehicles doing car stereo stuff. And it wasn't nothing super custom or badass. It was just, you know, installing.
Standard.
Yeah, installing a head unit and some speakers. You know?
That's cool.
But that kind of got me the in on learning the system and it being, you know, getting into the industry.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Cool. What was the next step?
From Circuit City, I kind of, you know, once again, it's my hobby and you're learning and you want to do more and you want to do more cool shit. And so from there, I went to an actual aftermarket, like a more higher end, a car stereo place that did big builds and elaborate vehicles. And it was called National Auto Accessories. It was in Irving, but they're no longer there. Actually on Auto Sound and Security. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's where, you know, we started doing a lot more stuff and competing, building rigs to go out and do the sound competitions and all that fun stuff.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
And then somewhere in that mess, did you end up getting into motorcycles? Stunt bikes or something?
Yeah.
I think one of the first times we've met, you kind of gave me a rundown of your history.
Yeah. In high school,
yeah,
our buddies had motorcycles. They had like really early sport bikes, kind of right when sport bikes were kind of showing around, the early Ninjas. And
oh man, I had a 250.
Oh geez.
Yeah. I only weighed 120 pounds so I could keep up with the 650s cause I was so light.
There you go. yeah, that kind of got me into motorcycles from high school and it carried on. You know, we always had a motorcycle or two, sport bikes and this and that. We did some racing also. We did some endurance racing, with our friends and that was kind of short lived. I could never finish a race. I don't know. I always crashed them. Yeah. So
we'll get into crashing them a little bit.
It was expensive. So,
so you gave up on that and then, what brought you to start Tribe?
So, kind of to get me into the off-road industry, that switch. I was working in San Antonio for those few years we worked in San Antonio, lived in San Antonio, and I worked for a custom company down there, Custom Sounds. And, you know, after doing the car stereos for so long, I kind of started getting burned out. We moved back. My wife's job kind of moved us back. And from there, I kind of took some time off and took a couple months off and, you know, just kind of recouped a little bit.
Right.
Trying to find myself, I guess. I don't know, or just fuck off. But eventually I was like, all right, I got to get something done. And I went across the street, across the highway. There was a dealership there. It was at the time it was a Nissan, and it was kind of like two dealerships put together. It was a Nissan dealership and it was a Chrysler Jeep dealership. And so I just went in there and just, you know, applied as a technician, just a multi-line kind of technician, and
right.
get whatever needs to get done. And that's kind of how I was introduced to the off-road scene, was the Jeep okay. side of the dealership. Yeah. I worked there for several years just doing regular maintenance stuff and reconditioning for cars. And one day they, you know, I started noticing they're doing more accessories on these brand new Jeeps. And at the time it was just TJs. They didn't even have like the newer JK platform. Right. So it was before 2007. And I noticed that they started doing a lot more accessories, and they were putting them up on the front line and selling them, and just the regular stuff, you know, small lift kits and 35s, chrome bumpers, you know, right. cool chrome. Yeah. couple body lifts, but, and they were outsourcing that. And one day they were like, yeah, we're losing money outsourcing it. We should just do it in house. And so they found me, and, you know, I was like, you know, because I did a lot of the other accessories for the dealership,
right.
Doing small things, you know. They'd sell a car and it needed a spoiler put on, so we'd drill all the holes and put the spoiler on it.
I gotcha.
So I kind of fell in that slot. And so next thing you know, I'm installing off-road stuff. And I don't know anything about off-road. I mean, nothing. You know, I'm putting a lift kit on and some 33s or 35s, and off it goes. And I have no freaking clue.
Really?
Nothing. Yeah.
So, okay, keep going.
I was just, you know, still, you know, car stereo guy and motorcycles. And it changed one day when the owner of the business and the general manager said, hey, we went to this Jeep Jamboree. We were invited to this Jeep Jamboree and we loved it. It was like, this is really cool. So they got a vehicle, a brand new, it was an LJ. They got a brand new LJ right off the truck. And we started like building one for them, okay. so they could keep doing more Jeep Jamborees, because it was such a great, you know, great time.
It was a great time and yeah. a great platform too. I mean,
yeah, we took a bone stock LJ and, you know, did a small, like a 3-inch lift and 35s and, you know, just a couple accessories on it. And they kept going to more and more of the Jamborees that were local around to us. And every time they came back, they were like, you know, they got the bug. They got hooked, because it was like, okay, we need bigger tires. You know, oh, we need lockers. And we found out, oh, this is, you know, our wheels are spinning and they got nothing going on here. Okay. Well, I don't know what the hell this shit is. A locker. Okay. Well, you know, we'll figure it out. And so I kept building their one LJ for them and build it up. Next thing you know, it's got a big V8 swap that we put in it and some Dynatrac 1-ton axles and a huge, I mean, every spider tracks thing you can, or poison spider armor you can imagine. Oh, cage. And, yeah, this thing is just like, it just evolved. And that's what kind of really I started learning, was building that one vehicle for them and all that stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, you did mention just a second ago, I want to actually, because we call this Tribe 16, and it's not just you that does what Tribe does. This is more of it's a tribe. It's a club.
Yeah.
And your right-hand person is your wife, Clarissa. How did you guys meet? Because she's hilarious. She's so fun to hang out with.
Yeah, she's the keeper. We met through, just right out of high school, through a mutual friend.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, and then started dating. And
you got married early, didn't you?
I believe we were 22.
22.
Yeah, 22. Okay. 21, 22.
And you have two kids?
Two boys. I have two boys.
Are they, one of them graduated yet? Or?
Yeah, graduated. One's about to start college here in the fall.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
My son is graduating next month, and tried to get him to go to the Air Force because it was free for dad. I told him, and he says he doesn't want to do that. So I'm charging him rent to live in the house now.
Yeah.
He's got to learn. Mm-hmm. But, okay, now that we got that down, also, now, how did the name Tribe 16 come about? When did you open Tribe? Let's start that.
I believe it was 2010, right around 10, is when I branched away from the dealership and started our own little shop. And it was with the help of with PSC Motorsports, the steering company.
Right.
They're local to us here, and we met them and all their guys early in when we were learning, you know, this off-road deal. And, you know, once again, they went to the Jeep Jamboree, and they found out they're now that they got lockers, their steering sucks. You can't steer. And they need hydraulic steering. So that's how we met the guys out there. We took a trip out there and met Tom Allen and Lance. Lance Gilbert was their main guy out there, and met all them and became real good friends with them, and started working on their rigs on the side. And Tom Allen said, "Hey, if you ever want to get out of the dealership and start your own deal, I'll work with you and help you out." You
cool.
know, he saw a lot of potential, and so he kind of really gave me my break.
Cool. And now the first shop that you were ever at was the one that I've been to, right?
Right.
The one I did the aerial shots through.
And- yeah. It was a little hole in the wall. It's, you know, it was, I think, 2,800 square feet, just a little shotgun warehouse. And it was a starter, and it ended up being there for quite a while. And, but we're fortunate to get out of there and get a nice newer place. But
oh gosh. Yeah. That was a fun spot. That was epic because it was so close to downtown Fort Worth.
Yes. Yeah.
If you'll go on my YouTube page, you can look at the aerial that I did. I flew through Tribe, and then I also went back up and showed where, how close they were to downtown Fort Worth, and it was a cool place. It has a lot of memories.
Yeah. Down being next to downtown, it was great because we'd go into downtown for lunch every day, and you know, down the touristy spots, we'd hit up the stockyards and have some lunch down there and this and that. So
yeah,
it was always a good time.
But you're only about 10, 15 minutes away. You're not that much farther.
Yeah.
So
now we're pretty close.
Yeah. So, and then how did the name Tribe 16 come about?
Tribe 16. Well, we actually started as Tribe 4x4.
Okay.
Back in the day. And we had a joke that was ongoing that one of our guys said, "Hey, you know what? You should change your name to Tribe 16 because the 4x4 is 16.
Oh, okay.
It's as simple as that. There is a backstory on that where that we kind of joked around. It was early car stereo days.
Okay.
When I was working for a custom shop. We had a sister shop down in Dallas, and they had a customer come in, and he was looking for some 6x9s to put in his vehicle. But the way he asked for it was, he was like, "Hey, how many 54s can I put in my back deck?" And the sales guy was like, he was the one that told us the story, the sales guy. He goes, I don't know what you mean, 54s. How many 54s? He goes, "You know, how many 54? 6x9, 6x9, 54s. How many 54s can I get in my back deck?" Like, oh, geez. So that was always a joke. That was always a joke over here. So that's kind of how that came to be. Was
okay.
The 4x4.
Well, Seth, my co-host, is usually here. He actually told that story to me on one of our prior podcasts, and I said, I'm going to have a podcast with him and see if that's actually the truth.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
It's it.
Pretty simple. Good story.
And we met actually Custom Splice. He knew that I was down here working all the time because I'm from Oklahoma. We're down here in North Richland Hills, Texas. And it was funny. Todd Stauffer from Custom Splice said, "Hey, you need to go check out the Tribe 4x4 shop." And I went, "Okay, who's that?" I looked it up and I found out who you were. So I sent you a Facebook message and said, "Hey, can I come by the shop and look at it?" You're like, "It's nothing special, but come on."
Yeah.
And that's how we started our friendship. And we've been friends for, gosh, probably since 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
And then of course, Ultra 4 and Dirt Riot got us going.
And then your race,
the Buzz the Red Dog. You were a sponsor for that. You made all the awards for it
for
both years. That was a fun time. And actually, we're talking to Justin Ramsey and Brian Trotter, the owners of Crossbar.
Ah.
We're in the process of possibly bringing that back.
Sweet.
2 days, two races, different parts.
Awesome.
So we're working on that. He's also working with TDRA to do some stuff as well.
Very cool.
So it kind of sucks that Ultra 4 is kind of gone from them because they, I mean, you've got MAO in comparison, and it's hard to beat. Right. MAO is hard to beat.
Yep.
And as much as Justin hated to admit it on the last podcast, he's like, It sucks, but it's true. They had better wheeling, though.
Mid-America Outdoors has an amazing facility and with awesome amenities, but they don't have the amount of land that Crossbar has as far as acreage and being able to set up a really long course with really good rock crawling and all that.
And that's just location. Yeah. Location is all it boils down to.
Yeah.
But to have two of the most premier parks, privately owned parks in the nation within 5-6 hours of both of us. They're 40 minutes from Crossbar for me. It's 2.5 for you.
Two hours from here.
And then you got Jay, which would have been 5 hours for you.
I think it's about 5.5, 6 hours.
5.5, 6 hours, because it's 3 hours for me. But I mean, to have that now available here in the Midwest. I mean, I remember when KOH started going and we're like, man, I wish I lived on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Because that's all the cool wheeling. Now we have it. And not to mention the largest racing series is based out of Oklahoma in the Midwest now.
Yep.
So it's very cool. But let's see, you started co-driving for Mr. Doug Jackson, didn't you? Is that what got you in the car first? No. Your first time driving was with your brother.
Oh, no, actually, no. Before Jason, was actually Doug. We were at a couple dirt riot races, and
that's an awesome series.
A great series that Rich put on, and because it was more local. It was a lot of local races, and they weren't, break the bank kind of racing thing. So we were actually at one, and Doug was there, and we were good friends and still are. And I think we were at Bridgeport, and I think it was Nationals, and Goat Built. Drew from Goat Built was there, and he had just came out with that Goat Built chassis, basically like a buggy in a box, ready to go. And he had two that he had brought with him along with his display on a pallet. And Doug was there, and Doug was like, let's do this. Let's build a buggy. And it was close enough kind of set up to where you could turn it into a race car. It had, a dual shock setup. And so that's kind of what got Doug into racing and me co-driving was we built this Goat Built chassis and slowly kind of evolved it into a full blown race car.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you had to redo the top half. What happened there?
Yeah.
I told you we'd get into wrecking here soon.
Yeah. So what happened is I learned a lesson and I learned a lesson on not to borrow anybody's shit and go jump it. Yeah. Yeah. Now we were out at Bridgeport and we were working on building some jumps or something for one of the dirt ride races. And I was jumping his car and I went a little too hard on it and went over the front and wadded the roof up on it. And luckily I didn't kill myself.
You hurt yourself pretty bad on that, didn't you?
I had a pretty good egg on my head. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Huge knot on my head, but yeah, that was a lesson learned. I love learning lessons from other people's mistakes, but this one I had to learn from my own. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And then you went from co-driving with Doug because one of the most epic ones I remember is a picture you posted on Facebook, or it was a video of you with a flashlight because you'd lost all the lights doing the race to midnight.
Yeah.
You were holding the flashlight while Doug was driving.
That was actually Dirt Right Nationals a couple years after when we bought that car there. We were finishing that race and it just got dark and all the lights were just covered with mud. So they were just doing nothing.
Yeah.
And we literally had the last lap to make it through the woods. And all I had was a flashlight in the door bag and I'm holding the flashlight out, trying to, shine around corners so we could not hit a tree. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. We finished the race. It was a good one.
Yeah. I remember that was one of the ones I remember and I wanted to bring up in the podcast, but then you went on to keep your partnership with PSC, mm-hmm. and then you built the car, didn't you, for Jason?
At the time, our shop did. We were considered, we weren't really Tribe, we were kind of more, we called it ASR Racing, Alan Shear Racing.
Right.
And that's when we kind of, went from full-blown Tribe to kind of full-blown racing. We're not working on much of anything else except for just starting to build race cars and this and that. And that's kind of how we transitioned to that and shifted over. And we picked up Jason and we built the first IFS. Actually, no, the very first car was the white car.
Yeah, it was the white car with the curves.
With a roll, yeah.
With the roll on the seat on the, they call that the D column.
Yeah, we call that car Whitey.
Whitey. And it's still racing to this day.
Yeah, still out there.
Yeah, I don't know who owns it now, but I saw it at KOH.
Yeah, it's changed up a little bit, and it's been through many cycles and repairs and upgrades. But yeah, that was our very first race car to ever cut our teeth with, and Jason, he raced it a handful of times and wrecked it a handful of times. It was short lived, and we moved from that straight to building the IFS car, the first IFS car.
I remember the first IFS car, and that's when I would randomly pop into you guys' shop when I was in town, and I got to see that thing get built, and I got to see a lot of the cars get built. Just I'd come in every 2 weeks or so or something like that, and it just escalated. It was so awesome. That was neat.
Yeah.
What was the other thing I was going to tell you? Oh, and just to set the record straight, are you and Jason brothers?
We are not like technically brothers. I was trying to think of the word. We're not bloodline brothers.
Gotcha.
But the race, the time we raced together and got to, you know, work together and hang out and listen together, him and his brother, Casey.
Casey, yeah.
We joke that we're brothers from another mother. We're, you know, which is pretty good enough for me.
Oh, yeah. No joke. Yeah. Jason and Casey are some of the best people. And yeah. I've done a podcast with both of them. Yeah. And I love doing them. They're so fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime they come around town or if we get to hang out with them at the Hammers, it's just that's one of my highlights. I always look forward to, as you know, seeing my brothers.
Do you remember the first time I met Casey?
I don't believe I do.
Okay. Texas Motor Speedway.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Man, that was a good one.
Texas Motor Speedway. We're staying at the Radisson for the Off-Road Expo.
Yep.
And you had brought, no, Casey was coming down. He was sponsored by Gigabit Off-Road.
That's right.
And thank you, Gigabit Off-Road. You guys took care of that tap.
What was it? The sushi place we went to? Or
no, it was the bar downstairs at the Radisson.
Oh, 10-4.
And we stayed down there. And there's some videos I never will see the light of day of me trying to record after 7 Jack and Cokes. I had hired in a guy, John Gatewood, to help me with the Racer's Lounge. And then I had my girlfriend. They had to carry me up to the room.
I remember this.
And the next morning, I'm laying next to my girlfriend at that time. And we both open our eyes. And I look up and she goes, why do you have a black eye? I was like, I don't know. Did I get hit? Was I an asshole somewhere or what? She goes, no. Oh, you were good. You were a happy drunk. We had to put you on a cart and take you up to the room, but you're a happy drunk.
it was probably the floor that gave it to you.
Well, as the day went on, the fuzziness kind of wore off, and I figured out that I fell off the toilet like 3 times.
Oh.
That's where the black guy came from. Yeah. But thank you, Casey and Gigabit Off-Road, for a good night. That was a fun event. I wish they still had that show. That show was fun.
Yeah. Always a good time with them.
Yeah, we put... Each individual show that we did, we put close to 200 spectators in a race car and gave them a ride.
Nice.
And it was something that was unique to Off-Road Expo. And I wish it was, it's the Unlimited Off-Road Expo, which is no longer around. It's not the one in Pomona. It's the one that Marvin, the Stammels put on, Axel and Marvin. So, but yeah, that's the first time I ever met Casey. So, but now then you started, you moved into this shop. When did you move into this shop?
It's been over 3 years now, so about 3.5 years.
Okay.
Yep.
And you were the sole owner before this building, correct?
Before we incorporated and teamed up with our other guys, I was, when it was Tribe 4x4, I was the sole owner of that.
Gotcha.
And then one guy trying to run a shop, and you can only do so much, and our good friend Lance and Matt Howell, they came up to me one day and said, hey, you know, we want to help you out. Want to, you know, try to build a business and make it expand and be successful. And said, hey, you know, let's partner up. And it's like, that's a done deal. All right, that's it. Let's go.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And so now there's four total owners, correct? No, three.
Three.
Three. And correct. It's Lance Gilbert from PSC.
From PSC, everybody. If you're in the industry and you ever needed some steering help, you probably were talking to Lance at PSC back in the day.
Right.
And he was probably telling you, you're an idiot for the way you plumbed it.
Yeah, no. Well, the funny thing was how I met Lance. We were at the 2011 KOH and I was with Derek West. And I was trying, we just got that car rebuilt from being burnt. And we did it, believe it or not, we did it under majority sponsorship. We were able to get that car rebuilt for about $2,500. That car that burnt down, that nice. Rusty Bray burnt down.
Wow.
And then, but we're in remote pit he's broke down. He's having steering issues. And we go to Lance, and Lance is dumbfounded. He can't figure out what happened. And I'm like, well, what do we do? He's like, I don't know what's wrong. it was a mystery. Yeah. And so we still finished. He went ahead and I think we ended up 42nd that year. That was one of his bad, but it was the first year off of, it was New Car Blues, basically what it boiled down to.
Right.
And so that's how I met Lance. But then the other partner you have is
Matt Howell.
Matt Howell.
Yes.
A lot of you guys know him from the 4500 stainless steel YJ.
It was aluminum, yeah.
YJ. Aluminum YJ.
Yep. Aluminum body. Aqualoo.
Yep. And now Dawson Allington owns that car now. Mm-hmm. And then also you might have he's hung out with famous people. Cheech.
Oh yeah.
Cheech Marin.
Cheech Marin.
And then a lot of you guys, if you guys are watching this on YouTube, I'm sure you heard the name Demolition Ranch.
Yeah.
He owned Demolition Ranch, owned one of his cars that they built. And you got to be on one of his videos too.
Yeah. Just short little, you know, blip. I was picking the car up. That was a fun one. The car had just sold. Keenan Leatherwood owned it. We built for our good friend, and he sold it to Demolition Matt. And I mean, he didn't have it very long, and we hit him up. I guess we had an idea. We're like, or Matt had the idea. It's like, hey, let's see if we can borrow the car from him and race KOH and, you know, get him involved, and, you know, he gets content and whatnot.
Yeah, that's all he needs is content.
That's where it kind of spawned from. And so I contacted Matt from Demolition. I said, you know, of course he's real cautious. Mm-hmm. Like, who the hell is this guy asking me to borrow this car I just bought for 70 grand or however much. But no, he was totally, once he learned who we were and we kind of struck up a deal, and he was down for it. So it was kind of neat.
That's cool. Yeah. I've watched all this stuff. And in fact, whenever I found out that somebody said, hey, Keenan finally sold his car. And I'm like, who to? And summertime's, he's typing away summertime. He goes, I think it's a guy, YouTube guy, like demo something. I'm like, it's Demolition Ranch. That's who bought it.
Yeah.
And so then Chris Summer goes, hey, I know there's a spare transmission that went with that. Get a hold of Demolition and I'll buy the transmission. And so that's what I did. I sent an email to Demolition Matt and said, hey, I know you have an extra transmission. Were you willing to sell it? And he said, yeah, I'm willing to sell it. Give me a number. And he gave him a number. I sent it to Summertime, and Summertime says, I accept. And then Matt's right-hand man, whoever that guy was at one point in time, I don't think he's even a part of the group anymore, but they met halfway. Of course, it wasn't demo Matt because he was right. Cautious. And they swapped off, and Summertime owned the transmission until he sold that car to Quentin Hilburn.
Nice.
His old car.
Yeah.
So, but that's just kind of a funny story about that.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Let's go current, I guess. All right. We're back. I had to get ourselves some libations, and also thank all of our sponsors that help us with this, which the one and only sponsor that helps us with this is Territory Whiskey. Territory Whiskey is bottled in Hollywood, Florida, but it's owned by a guy in Purcell, Oklahoma, that I happened to run into at an old dive bar in Noble, Oklahoma, and saw it, loved it, started wearing. I begged him for this hat, and I didn't know he was the owner, but I begged him for the hat, and he finally just gave it to me.
Nice.
And it was at a tasting that he was having, and then I called him like probably a month later and said, hey, I think we need to get together and do this podcast. You could be one of our sponsors of our podcast. And he goes, I'm down. He goes, meet me at the horse racing track. I said, okay. He goes, you can bet on my horse. I said, okay, I'll bet on your horse. And so sadly the horse like was an utter failure. he jerked to the left and hit the other horse, and then he didn't get the whole shot, and it was a short, it's just a quarter horse. It's not a thoroughbred, but it's a cinnamon pecan cinnamon liqueur whiskey. This is batch 4, so he's only got about 3,000 bottles out so far. So it is sweet. My girlfriend likes to mix it with Sprite.
Nice.
So but taste it and tell me what you think. Here we go. Cheers to Territory Whiskey and the See You on the Trail podcast and Tribe 16.
Sweet. It's pretty good.
You like it?
I do like it.
It's kind of a calmer version of a Fireball. I don't know if you want to compare it, because I know that's one of your drinks of choice.
I've never drank Fireball in my life. I don't drink that shit.
Hey, comment and tell me how many times you've seen him drink Fireball on the leg bed.
I think I've drank it out of a boot at one time with with Casey Shear at Glen Helen Raceway.
I think I've seen you taking it out of the you've taken a shot of Fireball out of the what is the shaft shot?
Shaft shot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Drive shaft with it like a shot ski.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So what do you think of it?
I like it. I'm going to definitely give it a little whirl with the Sprite.
Yep.
Yeah.
Give it a whirl with the Sprite. And then I've mixed it with Coke and put a lemon in it, and it reminds me of a Tootsie Roll.
Huh.
Basically anything that Screwball mixes good with.
Right. It does have a little kind of close to Screwball.
Yeah, it's similar. But
that's pretty smooth. I like it.
Yep. So Jamie Howard, there's another one for you.
Awesome.
Thumbs up.
We're going to drink that here later.
Yeah. Yeah. I invited him down here. He's racing his horse. I couldn't do it. But all right, back on track. Where were we at? Where you just actually purchased the building, got the two other partners.
Yes.
And what has happened since then?
So Matt Howell is a large factor of our new, obviously this new shop.
Mm-hmm.
He owns a construction company that does commercial construction. And so he purchased this building, or I should say his company, TBI, purchased the building, and it was not good. It was in bad shape. Needed a complete renovation. And his guys and crew came in and demolished everything inside the you know, pretty much from square one. We started all the way over.
Wow.
And so everything that you see in here is all brand new. Awesome layout. You know, we went from working in a little warehouse that didn't have a showroom, barely even had an office, little bitty office. And, you know, now we have a showroom. We put some cool rigs up in front and some product, nice, you know,
conference room, right?
Conference
here.
Room. The guys have a nice office in there. And then the rest of the shop's laid out really nice. And
oh, it's way better than what you had.
Big
I mean,
time.
You don't have to move five vehicles to get to one.
Yeah. We actually have a nice, very secured, fenced in, you know, area in the back that's we can leave projects outside. We actually just got finished building a 60-foot awning to keep some of the projects that show up that don't have tops to keep them underneath there, keep them dry.
Right.
You know, we still had to shuffle some stuff when the rain came in to try to get, you know, projects inside, but it's been, you know, a huge, you know, boost to be able to have all this, you know,
yeah. And I mean,
set up.
Not to mention you guys are busy. How many months out are you from taking on a new project?
Well, I guess, I mean, it depends on the size of the project. We have a handful of projects here that are really large builds that, you know, they're almost a year long builds. So small things in and out, though, usually we can hammer those out pretty quick. We'll get some small stuff in. Even medium-sized projects, we'll try to fit them in. And, you know, but if it's a full-blown, like you need a race car built or a tube chassis car, you know, all the way complete, you know, we try to squeeze it in within reason. So.
And how many employees do you have now? I mean, I remember at the old shop, at most, you had two mechanics plus yourself.
Correct, yeah. That's about right.
And then,
so there's a total of 10 of us in here now.
Gee, many Christmas. Yeah, you 10. Guys have grown tremendously. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, within a reason, we can't grow too much bigger. We're almost at a physical size, you know,
right,
of the shop and the projects that we can work on at any time. Or we even find ourselves working outside, you know, nowadays, if the weather's nice. You know, we've got projects on the lift and we can do stuff that comes in real quick. Somebody needs something fixed real fast. We'll, you know, we'll get back there and we'll get it done, even if we got to work in the parking lot. But so I think we're at a good sweet spot right now until, you know, we'd have to expand our building or more space.
And now you don't, I mean, you've kind of stepped away. I mean, you'll still build full lot race cars, but you're not in the race car maintaining anymore.
No, not like we were before. We were, you know, at one time we were nothing but racing. When Dirt Right was kicking and Ultra 4, and that's all we did was we just did 100% race cars.
Right, yeah, race car prep, everything, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of our local good friends own most of the cars that we built. I'd say our friends and our customers. Mm-hmm. They were real close to us. Everybody's
that's another thing that's really cool about Tribe. Once you become, you start out as a customer, you more than likely are going to become a friend.
Yeah.
And you become part of the Tribe.
That's it.
And you guys do like monthly meetups still? Do you guys still do that?
It's been a while since we've done that.
I mean, but this has been going on, gosh, the Tribe Crawfish Boil, I think I've been 8 times.
Yeah.
I think.
We love having a good time. And love having events and this and that. We used to do the Halloween party too.
Yeah.
It's been a while for that. We were just...
Your bathroom scared the crap out of me at the Halloween. It had a whole bunch of white faces on the side. It looked like everybody was watching you pee. I didn't like it.
We might bring that back. We might bring the Halloween parties back.
All right. Then I guess I got
to... We have to plan for it. Plan for it.
Yeah.
Gotcha. But I forgot what the hell we're talking about.
Just about the Tribe. The Tribe.
That's and the racing, yes.
Yeah, and you went from racing. Now you're doing more...
Kind of regular stuff. The race cars change hands. They get sold and change hands. So we don't see as many of them. And most of our business what's coming in is kind of average Jeep stuff or repairs or service stuff. But we also are doing, fabrication also. Okay. Building tube chassis, recreational stuff. We will get a race car here and there. We actually had not too long ago, we just finished building a Baja 1000 desert car. Ooh. For PSC Motorsports.
Tom Allen going to drive it?
They had a Jeep JL. It was a two-door JL. And the only thing that was left was the body. But it was a KOH stock class that they raced. And we cut it completely up and turned and stretched it. And turn it into a Nora 1000.
Oh, Nora.
Yeah,
that's the fun Baja 1000.
For the Nora, yeah. Right. For the Nora 1000.
Who was the driver of record on that?
It's Tom.
Tom's going to do it?
Yeah, okay. Tom and his son, they kind of do it together. So.
I wonder, is Tom going to be here today?
I don't believe so. I don't
okay.
know.
I just haven't seen him in a while. I'd like to say hi to him.
Every once in a while, they'll pop up. But yeah. Anyway. So that was the last race car we built.
Okay. So if you guys need anything off-road related from race car to tires, to lift kits, to anything under that spectrum, you guys can come right here to Tribe 16.
We do it damn near everything.
Yep. I would say, yeah.
Almost. Only thing we don't do is we don't paint and we don't powder coat. But obviously, because that's not our business. But
yeah.
But I mean, from the simplest things to the heaviest fabrication to solving the world's problems, that's what we do.
Yeah, we solve every, the world. We've, every, you and me have solved the world problems at like 2 a.m. every single race we've ever been to together.
Yeah, no. I should say not the world's problems, it's solving the off-roads problems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that sounds perfect.
We do a lot of miracles in the back.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So other than that, I think I'm pretty much done. Is there anything you else want to talk about? I mean,
I'm ready to go out there and eat some crawfish.
That's kind of where I'm looking at. We're almost at 45 minutes, and that's what I told you. So,
probably need to get back to the party and make sure everybody's doing their job out there and cooking barbecue and cooking crawfish and everybody's having a good time. And yeah, I'm going to enjoy some more of this.
The territory, yeah, that's good stuff, man.
Absolutely.
Well, other than that, I think we're done. And guys, this is Hitch and Adam Shear saying, "See you on the trail." Peace out. We done.
Sweet.